Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, please check us out at consumerguide.com. Be sure to check out our Best Buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or crossover. You'll also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide, plus all sorts of fun auto-related stuff. And if you've missed an episode or two, how'd that happen? You can stream back episodes of the Car Stuff Podcast right there on our homepage. If you have any questions or comments, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's see who's online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk and the driving force behind the Drive She Said blog. Welcome to the show, Jill Simonello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It is going well. It is good to be here. How are you doing?
It's good. It's good. Crazy week.
Why crazy?
Well, you and I talked about this a little bit online, offline, but the thing that's happening right now in the auto world, as you know,
yes,
is that because auto reveal events aren't happening as they used to, manufacturers are busy rushing vehicles to us for very short stays so that we can see them, write about them for launches. And I'll be honest, I've had to be here early a lot this week.
Okay, so basically, that's like 5 a.m., 6 a.m.?
What early is to me is not that important. It's that
So you're talking like noon. You've had to be there at noon.
Whatever. The point is it's early for me.
Okay.
And people at the office have been sort of stunned to see me rolling in here early, but I'm chipper. I think I'm productive.
Okay.
Caffeine helps.
Yeah, the Diet Pepsi that you're drinking helps, right?
Yeah. Got a Diet Pepsi going right now. All right. He is the senior editor here at Consumer Guide. He is president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, and he won fourth place in the 2018 Morton Grove, Illinois Chili Cook-Off, earning big accolades for his Bell's three-star extra chunky. Welcome to the show, Damon Bell.
I think I was robbed. That fourth place finish was...
Well, I think it was
I had a
chunky
blue ribbon. Yep.
Had it been medium chunky, you would have gone second place easy.
Yeah. It was that extra.
Yes.
It just kind of,
That's right.
Oh, man. All right. Coming up after the first break, our guest today is Ash Hack. He is the marketing manager overseeing the launch of the all-new Toyota Venza crossover. We'll be talking about this likable new Toyota and learn where it fits in the brand's expanding lineup. You do not want to miss this conversation. But before that conversation, Damon, we need to have a conversation about some news that Volkswagen is making.
Yeah. Just this week, Volkswagen revealed a new vehicle, a new compact SUV that it's adding to its lineup for the 2022 model year. That's the Volkswagen Taos. This is a vehicle that kind of straddles the line between a subcompact SUV and a compact. It slots beneath, in both size and price, it slots beneath the Tiguan in Volkswagen's SUV lineup. And yes, it's just another bit of evidence at how the market really is shifting to crossover SUVs.
Yeah, and an interesting point about that too, as Volkswagen rolls in a new small crossover, we weep a little bit because the Golf is going to be disappearing from American shores. And
it does, yeah, it certainly appears that way. There is a new generation Golf that I believe is on sale in Europe now, but at this point, it seems that Volkswagen is electing to not bring the next generation regular line Golf to the U.S. They have said that they are going to bring both of the Golf's performance versions, which are the Golf GTI and the Golf R, but the standard garden variety Golf, it looks like the 2021 current generation model will likely be the last on our shores for that vehicle.
You know, interesting thing about the Golf, and I'm going way off topic now, but you feel free to reel me in as you see fit. But going back to the Rabbit, which I think launched sometime back in, what was it, 75, 74, something like that, the Rabbit was very successful and very popular. But in later years, the Rabbit or the Golf, depending on what it was called in any given year, was always being outsold in the U.S. by the Jetta small sedan. Mm-hmm. Just never really a fireball in the U.S. market, but the Golf has been the best-selling vehicle in Europe a number of times. So just Americans aren't big fans of that sort of two-box hatchback thing, and Europeans are. So it makes sense that it probably would be evicted from Volkswagen's lineup because all the activity in the U.S. now is crossover.
It is. And I am probably – I have a completely cliched auto journalist opinion here, but I do have to pour one out for the Golf. I think you really would be hard-pressed to find an auto journalist who does not have a very soft spot in their heart for – Volkswagen Golf, even the regular Golf. And I think, you know, the GTI performance version is sort of a given that auto journalists love that. But even that garden variety Golf, it hits such a sweet spot of practical, affordable, the sweet spot between a decent, absorbent ride, yet fun, kind of flingable handling. And again, something else we have to pour one out for, a Golf with a manual transmission is just a delight to drive. And that's, we recently had a 2020 Golf with a manual transmission in our test fleet, and they are basically monospec vehicles, so there's not a lot of options there, but you can still get one with a manual. And the thing is just a delight to drive. And so it makes me a little bit sad that you know, everyday kind of fun to drive compact hatchback is basically headed toward extinction. And again, this Taos is that's the market is moving to vehicles like this. And I guess the people are looking more for that upright body height, kind of easier to get in and out of, and the increased cargo capacity with a given footprint. So in that respect, yes, this Taos is going to be exactly what the market is looking for.
Well, so the good news, though, because you mentioned the Golf is, you know, fun to drive, Euro, you know, hatchback, whatever. The great thing that Volkswagen has done, and I was just recently in a Volkswagen Atlas, the 2021 model, they do a really good job of making all of their vehicles fun to drive. I mean, even the Atlas was really sporty and nimble. So imagine that in a compact CUV. I mean, it's not going to have the manual transmission, so definitely pour one out there. But I see that being, you know, functional utilitarian, but also I think it'll have that fun to drive capability that Volkswagen puts into all of its vehicles. So, I mean, there is small hope there.
Yes, I'm sure it will. Maybe not. It won't be at the same level as a Golf, but yes.
No, that's true.
And honestly, and again, I with a wife and two kids, I would have a tougher time convincing my wife that we would get a Golf as a family vehicle over a Taos. So I guess that is really the bottom line.
Yeah. I have to disagree with Jill a little bit. I agree that the Atlas probably rides, or not rides, but handles a little bit better than you might expect.
Yeah.
But I find the current generation, the new Tiguan, disappointing in that regard. I don't think it's engaging at all. I think it's refined. Okay. I think it does what it's supposed to do. I'm not sure it's fun. The previous generation of the Tiguan, the first Tiguan, I thought that was all sorts of fun to drive.
Yeah.
So Go ahead. I haven't driven the new Tiguan, so that does not enter into it. So thank you for pointing that out, because I don't know.
Now the Taos could very well be that. Jill, you had dug up some numbers on the Taos. Do you want to share those in terms of size?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is Taos comes in as the smallest SUV in the Volkswagen lineup, but it is actually ever so slightly bigger than the first generation Tiguan. So, you know, it's currently, as it stands, the Taos is 175.8 inches long, and that's 9.3 inches shorter than the current Tiguan. But the original Tiguan was 175.5 inches. So the original Tiguan is what the current Taos is, basically.
Yeah, it's such a common thing. Like you can look at similar comparisons, like, you know, what a Chevy Silverado or a Ford F-150, what they measured in 1990 versus now. There always is this tendency for vehicles to get larger as they age.
Yeah, they get larger and they're like, wait, we actually want something smaller. Let's just create a new vehicle.
And
that, so
yeah, create something new beneath it. Yeah.
Yeah, and to that point, too, the Taos also rides on a wheelbase that's 3 inches longer than the original Tiguan. So this is a more substantial vehicle, and it is probably more family-oriented, and it'll probably work better for a small family or people who need to use the back seat. Mm-hmm. But, Damon, as long as we're pouring one out, I'm going to pour one out for that first Tiguan. Interestingly, I have a buddy who had owned a first generation Tiguan, drove the new one. And again, he exactly echoed my sentiments. He didn't think it was that much fun to drive and went elsewhere for his replacement car. Uh-huh. But this will probably be a pretty high volume product for Volkswagen. And it plays in an interesting size class, as Jill noted. There's a lot of stuff there now that's new, like the CX-30, the Chevy mm-hmm. Trail, I'm sorry, the Mazda CX-30,
mm-hmm. Right.
Chevy Trailblazer, and the Kia Seltos. I think that's where this is.
Yes. Yeah, it's hovering right around that size and price level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just pre-COVID, it seemed like the compact crossover segment, which is RAV4, the Toyota RAV4 and the Honda CR-V and those vehicles, was starting to stop growing. Like, it's a huge, huge segment, but the growth seemed to be off of that. And COVID seems to have started younger shoppers who don't want to commute anymore looking right. for smaller, more affordable things. So I think the new segment might be this weird tweener segment between subcompact and compact crossovers.
Yeah. There are two other things I want to point out about the Taos. I'm looking at Volkswagen's media site which has pictures and a press release on the Taos. And I'm noting that a term that I have not seen before, and that's that the Taos has an IQ driver assistance mm-hmm. suite of features. And I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but I think it's very interesting how automakers they all seem to now be branding their active safety features as a group of items, like Ford is Co-Pilot 360. We just talked about the Rogue last week, and I can't remember what they call it. But yes, IQ Drive is now the way Volkswagen refers to things like forward collision warning with automatic emergency braking and lane keep assist and that kind of stuff.
What's funny about that, I think, is that this is going to be very short-lived. This stuff is all going to be, if not legislated, consumer demand is going to put this stuff as standard on everything in a couple of years, and the branding of it is going to seem silly in retrospect.
Do you think we always, you know, since we are right next to the production of Collectible Automobile Magazine, we have a front row seat to automotive history as well. And the 50s trade names for things we usually chuckle at now, like, you know, Hydramatic and you know, Magic This. And it's always that kind of a little bit of a hucksterish vibe about those. So do you think things like IQ Drive and Co-Pilot 360 are going to seem similarly quaint 50 years from now?
My two favorite badges maybe in the history of 80s and 70s and 80s badging, no, 80s, would be the fuel injection sticker that went on the door handle of the Firebird Camaro. It was a sticker that was inlaid into the door handle, and it said fuel injection, which, okay, that was early 80s, so fuel injection was just kicking in. But
kind
still,
of new, yeah. It'd become commonplace.
Every car had it. And then one of my favorites, and Jim Mattea, the founder of MAMA and longtime Chicago Tribune writer, often wanted and then ended up getting cars that had ABS badges on their deck lid.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Jim's argument was that you should know that the car in front of you can stop shorter than you can.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. at least in a more controlled fashion.
Right.
ABS is never about shorter distances. It's just that the wheels do not lock up when you stand on the brakes.
Yeah. Right. Well, so in addition to the safety tech, I mean, I think it's also worth mentioning that the Taos is going to get some other cool things. Such as the digital cockpit. So, you know, that's if you're familiar with Audi vehicles and some of the other Volkswagen vehicles, it's basically the virtual display behind the wheel, and you can configure it in settings with either a big map or gauges or whatever. But I think it's really cool. I think some people think it's a little bit hinky, but I think it's cool. So it'll have that. And so, you know, we're talking about this being in the tweener class, possibly comparing with something like a Kia Seltos, but the Kia Seltos is not going to have this kind of technology. And so I find that interesting that they are positioning this as a smaller vehicle that's going to have some really cool up-level features. So, sure. You know, in-car Wi-Fi, XM satellite radio, those are given items, you know, that you get in a lot of vehicles. But, the dual zone climate control, heated and ventilated seats, which is very important to keep marriages like mine harmonious. Because heated would be me, ventilated would be my husband.
Ventilated, I'm a ventilator. Yeah, I need ventilated seats. Yeah, I've become soft that way.
I need heated. I've become soft that way. So, in addition to being small, it's not going to be quote unquote cheap per se. It's going to have a lot of cool available technology that I think is going to help it stand out from the other vehicles competing in this class.
Yeah,
right. Good point. One last point I want to make is the press photos for the Taos. Tom, I think we've talked more than once about, I see a common complaint among car guys is like, oh, vehicles are just, they're all boring colors now. It's just white and silver and there's no... The press photos for the Taos, I don't know what the name of the color is, but it's a very vibrant, almost Smurf blue.
Yes.
and that is what their official launch color is, which I think is interesting. And we've seen that show up a fair amount in these lower end SUVs, like the Hyundai Venue has some interesting colors. Mm-hmm. The Kia Seltos has that star bright yellow. So I just want to point out that it's not really automakers' fault. It's what people buy. So I see that automakers are continuously sticking their necks out and making vehicles in very interesting colors. So there you go.
I wrote about this, too. About a year ago, I interviewed a dealer, big dealer here in the Chicago area, and we talked about the fact that he won't stock colors at his store that people won't buy quickly. And because Americans are lazy and impatient, they don't order cars. So what you find on lots is what a dealer can sell quickly. So America, this is your fault.
That's right. There are cool colors out there. You just need to buy them.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. When does the Taos go on sale, kids?
Next summer.
I believe it. Yeah. Mid-2021 as a 2022 model.
New small Volkswagen, the Taos. We will certainly be talking about that more when we have more exposure to the vehicle. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Toyota's Ash Hack about the all-new Toyota Venza. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly, strongly suggest that you give me a follow on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom, that is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. If you spot a cool, old, or unusual car on the road, take a picture of it and share it on Twitter using the Car Spotter hashtag, and I will share that with my followers. All right. Our guest today is a 13-year veteran of Toyota, handling marketing communication duties for the Sienna minivan and the Avalon sedan. He is also in charge of communications for the all-new and very likable Venza crossover, which we are going to chat about today. Welcome to the show, Ash Hack. Ash, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is ours, Ash. Ash, where are you today? Are you at home? Are you at work? Are you in Detroit or Texas?
Right now, I'm in Texas. Your office is based out of Plano, Texas. Uh-huh. Toyota Motor North America office is in Plano, Texas. I live in McKinney, so just north of that. Right now, we are working from home, trying to maintain social distancing and everything like that. So,
we have heard from other makers that the working from home thing has proven to be surprisingly productive. Are you seeing that as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think there are a couple dynamics with working from home. Number one is it's very productive because, and it's also a kind of a probably a bad side effect as well. You're at home already, so there's no separation between home and work.
Yeah.
Before, when we were working in the office, 5 o'clock, we'd clock out and our work would be done. Now we're working from home, 5 o'clock comes and goes. We're still in front of our computer at home. And so it's definitely, more productive from a standpoint of we don't have to deal with the commute back and forth every day. It's gotten us a lot better at our, digital communications as well. So, we just have to hone those. And, that's definitely a lot of efficiency gained from that. The downside is I've got 3 kids, and especially when they were homeschooling, that was an extreme challenge. And so I'm glad, where we are, they made the decision to send them back to school. So that's a little bit of a breather for us. It was a definite challenge.
Well, somehow amidst the COVID turmoil and working with your kids at home, you have managed to launch a really impressive vehicle. The all new Toyota Venza is on the roads now. I think a lot of people might not know what this car is because it is all new and slots in a new place in the Toyota lineup. So if you could tell us a little bit about that car and where it fits in the Toyota showroom.
Yeah, thank you. So, the Toyota Venza sits right between the RAV4 and the Highlander. And, it's similar size interior-wise to the RAV4, but it's larger in, front to back than the RAV4. It's a little more premium than the RAV4. And, that's basically where it sits in the Toyota lineup, similar to where the previous Venza nameplate sat within our Toyota lineup. So, it's a great offering to kind of bridge the gap between somebody who wants something a little more premium than the RAV4 had to offer, but didn't need the space that the Highlander has to offer.
It's an interesting vehicle too, I think, in that the tweener car, as I've started calling them, that slots between the compact crossover and the midsize crossover, is a growing field, and we probably need to name that field at some point. But there are new vehicles out there, like the Chevrolet Blazer, the Hyundai Santa Fe has been repositioned into that, and the Honda Passport. But Venza seems to be doing something a little bit different. The Santa Fe is very much like the other crossovers in that lineup. The Passport's got sort of a rugged thing going on. And I would argue that the Venza, and correct me if I'm wrong, has kind of a Lexus light feel to it.
We've heard that a lot. And even in kind of the exterior styling, the Venza, it came from a Japanese vehicle called the Harrier. And that Harrier in the past was a Lexus model. So that might be where that flavor's coming from. We did try to go more premium with the quality of the interior, the soft touch points within the interior. That very strong exterior styling, it does evoke a more premium feel. And I think that's where that kind of Lexus flavor is coming in. It's definitely a Toyota through and through. We're not positioning this as a luxury vehicle, right? But it is more premium than you would typically see in a base automotive brand, right? So it's a home run in our eyes from that standpoint.
Yeah, one thing that we should mention is that unlike the previous generation Venza, this new one comes only as a hybrid. And I know that you guys have done the same thing with the redesigned Sienna minivan that's also launching for 2021. Can you talk a little bit about the strategy behind that? It does seem significant in that we are kind of moving to a time where that will probably be happening more frequently, where just a vehicle is kind of just a given that it's a hybrid. Is that something that you even really need to push that much? And is, do you think that's a direction things will continue to move in the future?
That's a great point. And Toyota's always had a strong hybrid strategy. You know, you well know that the Prius has done very well for us in the North American market. And, you know, I think as it relates to what the hybrid offers to the customer, that's where the big win is. Hybrids nowadays are very powerful vehicles, right? You've got that instant torque from the electric motor working seamlessly with the gasoline engine. And you've driven the Venza. It's so smooth in its power delivery. Mm-hmm. The transition mm-hmm. between the hybrid engine and the gas engine, it is seamless. So you get the smooth ride that decreases that NVH, that noise, vibration, and harshness. And you get the power that you need on demand. And with the MPG that the hybrids are able to deliver, you know, the Venza gives us a 39 MPG combined fuel economy. That is amazing. You just can't match that package in a gasoline engine, you know, internal combustion engine.
I would also point out too, yes, the acceleration is seamless, but I think even more important, the braking is virtually seamless as well. And that's the biggest thing I've noticed as hybrids have been continuously developed over the past decade or so. The early ones, that regen process with the brake that happened with the braking was very less than linear, and the Venza and a lot of the other new hybrids, again, that's a much more seamless feel.
Absolutely. Yeah, our engineers have taken great lengths in ensuring that brake feel remains what the customers want. And you're right, you know, in the past you could absolutely tell when that regen braking was working, and the brake feel, it didn't feel exactly like a, you know, a regular car with regular brakes, but it was working, it was doing its thing. So the engineers have gone a long way in making sure that whenever you hit that brake, it's got a smooth, consistent feel, and it does what you want it to do, right? So that's really what they've tried to accomplish, and they succeeded definitely in this car. Its brakes work great. You know, I've got one in the driveway right now that I've been driving around for the past couple of weeks. And, you know, every time I drive it, it doesn't cease to amaze me how smooth the car is and how basically it does exactly what you want it to do. And, you know, that's an awesome thing for, you know, our hybrid, hybrid drivetrains to be performing that way. Mm-hmm.
So, question for you, kind of along the lines of the hybrid. I know that the RAV4 also has a hybrid system, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how they are similar and how they are different. Because to me, the RAV4 and the Venza, like, they feel completely different to me.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I haven't been involved in the RAV4 hybrid discussions as it was released to design and mm-hmm. You know, the way they designed that vehicle. I was involved in the original, you know, when we launched the RAV4 hybrid, I was actually on that project. You know what? I can't speak to the specific technical differences in between mm-hmm. the two, but I know exactly what you're saying. You know, you're talking about what is basically the same base drivetrain, right? Mm-hmm. In the two vehicles. And the Venza just feels a lot more refined and tuned and smooth in its power delivery.
Yes.
And
yes,
I really think that has to do with the tuning. You know, to answer your question, I would have to go back to the chief engineer and ask that mm-hmm. specific question. You know, Saiki-san, our chief engineer in Japan, he actually helped develop both systems. So I can ask that question and get back to you.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just very fascinating because the RAV4, and I don't mean to put the RAV4 down because it's a totally great vehicle, but it just almost feels a little bit clunky in comparison to the Venza. Like, if driving them back to back, like, the Venza is just so amazing. it's smooth and it's quiet and seamless and all of those good things. So, I just was wondering if you could point to any of the differences, because it is the basic same powertrain, but definitely different.
Yeah, and I think when you look at where they fit in our lineup, you know, the RAV4 has always been positioned as, you know, how far can you take it? And, you know, you can go anywhere with this vehicle. And the all-wheel drive system in the RAV4 is, you know, is awesome in handling, you know, kind of off the beaten path terrain and things of that nature. And the car gets up and goes. A RAV4 is, you know, it's got a lot of power. It's got a lot of power in its delivery. You know, when you look at the Venza and where it sits in our lineup, they needed to give it a more smooth and refined feel.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of car it is, you know. So they really, you know, gave the Venza its own personality and everything that they infused into it.
Yeah. The other, so the other thing that we have to talk about is one of the Venza's most, I would say its most whimsical feature, and that's the available Stargaze panoramic sunroof, which in a nutshell, it's a large panoramic sunroof like many vehicles have. This one does not open, but it has a feature that no other vehicle has at this point. And the Stargaze feature is that you can press a button and there's an embedded kind of liquid crystal technology in the glass that it will turn from clear to frosted at the touch of a button. So I actually have a... And I finally got to experience that in person. We've got a Venza Limited test vehicle in our fleet right now. So I was impressed with how instantaneous the switch was. And I also have to mention that it got me, it's a $1,400 option, which frankly, if I was buying a Venza myself, I don't think I could pry my wallet open for that. But I have to say, it did get me out of a little bit of a jam yesterday morning. Because my six-year-old was throwing a fit when we needed to get out of the house to go to school. We're lucky enough where I live to have in-person schooling as well. And as you can imagine, it's always a herding cats to get the kids out the door and in the vehicle in the morning. My six-year-old was having a meltdown, and I was able to dangle the promise of making the watching the Stargaze roof turn on and off as a carrot. Like, hey, if you get in the vehicle, you can you, we can look we can play with the sunroof. But if you're not going to get in the vehicle, you can't. So that was the nudge he needed to drop his protest and get in the vehicle and go to school.
Well, come on, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
There you go.
So that's worth the
unfortunately,
money.
Unfortunately, that one or two more times, and I think the novelty will wear off for him, and we're back to using other methods. But for at least that that one time, and maybe a few more, it was what I needed to make it get him in the vehicle.
Ash, can we talk real quick about how the Venza is available? There really isn't a base model, right? There's three trim levels, and what is the price range?
Yeah, so XLE, XLE, and Limited are our three, the three grade levels, right? And when you're looking at the LE starting at $32,470, XLE at $36,000, and then the Limited at $39,800, you know, that's basically what you're looking at from a price range standpoint. And you're right. There isn't a, you know, stripped down, decontented model. They all come with really great features and, you know, they're all, you know, jam packed with some of the great features, standard, right? So we've got our Toyota Safety Sense standard and, you know, the all wheel drive hybrid system is the same across all models.
Yeah, we spent some time with an XLE. Was that right, Damon? Our first
XLE with the optioned up. Yep.
And we came away, I got to be honest with you, we came away really impressed and most impressed by the hybrid drivetrain. As Jill noted, very smooth. And it's as if Toyota got the brake accelerator electric motor interplay issues out of their system with the second generation Prius. Because since then... Since then, you guys have been the gold standard for hybrid operation. But the good news is that in our testing, we averaged 42 miles per gallon pumping our own gas. So very impressive.
I
should mention, too, this Limited that we have in our test fleet now, is basically the fully loaded model, I believe. And that sticker, the bottom line is $43,100. And given the level of interior materials and the space inside, and the fact that your fully loaded compact SUVs, like a fully decked out RAV4 or a Mazda CX-5 signature, can crest that 40K mark. Even a loaded Venza is a pretty notable value.
One other point about this, it rides on the same wheelbase. We've noted that as the RAV4. I am not a small guy, if you've seen me. I fit okay in the RAV4. I fit very well in the Venza. I don't know what the difference is exactly or how the seat utilization is different, but very roomy for the big guy. Ash, we are completely out of time, but we appreciate you joining us today. Real quick, the Venza is in showrooms right now, correct?
That is correct.
Yep. Excellent. All right. People should check that out. And read our complete review of the XLE on consumerguide.com. Also, we're going to be adding a review of the Limited in the next few weeks, so you want to check that out too. Ash, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, Jill, Damon. Really appreciate you having me on.
The pleasure was all ours.
Thank you.
All right. That was Ash Hack with Toyota Communications talking about the all-new Toyota Venza, a vehicle you should know about. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill.
Hey, what?
Jill, you have a Farmers Only account. How can the kids keep track of your day-to-day meanderings?
Farmers Only. That's good. Yes, Jill Simonello. If you just search for my name pretty much on any social media that exists, except for Farmers Only... I am not, in fact, on Farmers Only, but you will be able to find me just by searching my name, Jill Simonello.
Sounds good. Damon, you're active on Zivity. Tell us about it.
I don't know what that is. Is Farmers Only, is that like a dating site for farmers?
I think it is, actually. And coincidentally, I did once upon a time date somebody who was a farmer. So.
No.
All right, then.
Yeah.
No, I'm not on Zivity or Farmers Only, but I am on Twitter, and that is my handle is Damon Bell Likes Cars.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Where, Damon? Tell us again.
Not on Farmers Only or Zivity on Twitter. Damon Bell Likes Cars.
Sounds good. All right. It is Car Stuff Power Quiz time, kids, and today's topic is, fittingly, Toyota.
Oh.
Today's Car Stuff Podcast is sponsored by Tom on Twitter. If you're not following Car Guy Tom, are you really on Twitter at all? All right.
Probably not, if they're not following you.
All right. Jill, the first question goes to you, and if you've been paying attention, this one's going to be very easy.
Uh-oh.
Which of the following is not a 2021 Toyota Venza trim level? L, XL, XLE, or Limited?
L.
Damon, same question to you.
Sorry, read the names, the levels again.
They are L, XL, XLE, Limited.
I think it's XL.
Oh, Damon, not paying attention today.
Oh, no.
It was L. There is no L. Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember XL. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
I thought it would be LE.
I want to point out that Jill got every question right last week, Damon.
No,
yeah, now I, yeah, I've done it in the past.
I know, but a few you're losing weeks ago. Again.
I guess so.
Yeah. All right, Damon, this question goes to you. Which of the following is not a 2020 Toyota Camry XLE color option? Ruby Flame Pearl, Blue Streak Metallic, Galactic Aqua Mica, or Kiwi Mist Mica?
Oh, my gosh. Can you read those names again?
I can. Ruby Flame, Blue Streak, Galactic Aqua, or Kiwi Mist?
I'm going to say Galactic Aqua.
All right. Jill, same question to you.
I don't remember any greenish looking Camrys. I mean, I could be wrong because, you know, pretty much everybody buys white.
They do.
So I'm going to go with the Kiwi.
Wow. Jill's killing it today.
Galactic Aqua?
That's the real color.
There's no water in space.
That you know of. It was once water up there, because isn't there ice out on the moon or something?
Maybe there is.
So I'm just, you know.
Doesn't Kiwi Mist sound like a cocktail that's aimed really
at... Sounds like a Snapple flavor.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it makes me think of that ugly green color that the hybrids used to be.
Oh, that wasn't an ugly color.
Well, yeah, it was kind of ugly.
You're being hard on hybrids today, Jill.
Only a couple. I like the Venza.
I need to look up Kiwi Mist when we're done. That actually sounds like it could be a cool color.
All right, Jill.
Yeah.
There's just one engine available for the Toyota 4Runner, a burly 4-liter V6. Is that engine rated at 240 horsepower or 270 horsepower?
You called it burly.
I did.
And this is the 4Runner. Uh-huh. So... big vehicle.
Yeah.
I'm purely guessing here, so I'm going to say 270 because you said burly.
Okay, because I said burly.
Yeah.
That could be torquey, though. All right, Damon.
That's such a tight gap. Did Jill say 270?
She did.
Yes.
Since I've been burned the two previous times, I'll agree with Jill this time.
Damon, you're correct. So is Jill, 270.
I was going to say, did I thwart you and you got the wrong answer because I steered you the wrong? But no, okay, 270. Burly, that was the key there.
Damon, your path to victory involves Jill failing on the both next two questions and you getting them right. That's the only
I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah.
All right, this question goes to Damon. Damon, what is the base price of a 2020 Toyota RAV4? This would be a front-wheel drive L model with destination. Mm-hmm. Is it $24,550, $27,225, or $30,110?
Give me the first two amounts again.
$24,550, $27,225.
I'll say 24.
All right. By the way, these prices are here in Illinois. Toyota prices can be higher in the Southwest. Jill?
I was actually going to say 24 as well.
You're both wrong, kids.
Oh, is it 27?
Oh, really? 27?
27 to 25, yeah, with destination.
Oof, yeah. Well, that, you didn't say that. That totally would have changed my answer.
I totally said it. I totally did.
We're going to have to play that back. I don't think you said it was with destination.
All right. Yeah. We don't got to do nothing. Okay. Finally, this question goes to Jill first. Which of the following is the least expensive? The 2021 GR Supra 2-liter or the 2021 Highlander Hybrid Premium?
Oh, man. Great question.
Okay, so you're saying the base Supra with the 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine or which trim level of the Highlander?
The Highlander Hybrid Platinum.
Hybrid Platinum.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, so that's going to be your tippy-top tier.
Yep. It is indeed. You are correct, sir.
Because this is such an incongruent question, I'm going to go with the 2.0-liter Supra.
All right.
I'm second guessing myself. No, I'm going to stick with it.
So you're not second guessing yourself.
I am totally second guessing myself, but I think I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to go with the Supra anyway.
All right, Damon.
I'm going to say the Highlander Hybrid Platinum is more expensive.
No, the Supra is actually quite the deal in 2-liter form. $43,985 with destination. The Highlander Hybrid Platinum comes in just under $50,000, $49,540.
Yeah.
So Jill has won this one 3-1, but we're going to the bonus.
Yeah, but
Because
yes, I did win that last question. Just want to point that out.
No. It was a Supra, he said.
No, I said the Highlander was more expensive.
Oh, I thought you were picking the Highlander.
No. I said Highlander is more expensive than the Supra. You can play the tape.
No. If there's a takeaway from the show, it's that I need to listen to people on the show. So note to self, pay attention to what other people say. Got it.
Sorry if I phrased my answer wrong, but I did say the Highlander is more expensive.
I think you got it wrong by Jeopardy rules. You didn't say what is. I'm just going to say Jeopardy rules. You got it wrong.
Tom's not Alex Trebek.
Few people are.
All right. This question goes to Damon first. Damon, this is the bonus question. According to restobiz.ca, a survey of menus in that country, Canada, what is the single most popular sandwich condiment? Is it ranch dressing, bacon relish, mustard, or mayonnaise?
Oh.
Most popular Canadian sandwich condiment.
And roll through them again, please.
Sure. Ranch dressing, bacon relish, mustard, or mayonnaise. Yeah, hey.
I know Canadians like their vinegar potato chips. Just as an aside, I'm gonna say mustard.
Mustard, Jill. Same question to you.
Well, see, I was gonna say mayonnaise because you said condiment, and I know a lot of people in outside of the United States use mayonnaise on their French fries. Which ew.
Oh,
ew.
That's really good.
The palm frites.
Yeah. So I was going to say mayonnaise, let me see. So you said ranch, bacon, something, mayonnaise, or ketchup?
No, it was ranch dressing,
bacon relish,
mustard, mm-hmm. mayonnaise.
Got it. I'm going to go with bacon relish because I think that's weird.
Yeah, no, it's mayonnaise.
Oh. So
I do want to know more about this bacon relish.
Yeah, I know.
Here's the bad news. I just made that up. So,
oh, God, you cruel.
Yeah, that's not even on the list.
Maybe that's something that needs to be invented.
Yeah, it just sounded weird and Canadian to me, so I said it.
That's your new million-dollar idea, Damon, bacon relish. And you can sell it out of your Damon Rubs truck. Which is reference to last week's show and the fact that, you know, Damon does massages. I figure I should clarify that.
Hey, Damon.
In silence.
Damon, are you ready for a terrible segue?
Yes. I'm ready for any kind of segue.
Get out of that.
Damon, do we have any articles about bacon relish on the blog?
Unfortunately, no. I'll get to work on that right away. What we have up as of right now is a normal great selection of test vehicle reviews. I'll rattle off those. We've got 2020 Corolla Hatchback XSE. Again, speaking of manual transmissions, this one has had a manual, which makes it a heck of a lot more fun to drive. And like I've said before, every time we get a mainstream vehicle with a manual transmission through our test fleet, I always kind of think in the back of my head, is this going to be the last one?
Yeah, well,
they're not proliferating. They're headed toward extinction.
And can you talk a little bit about the manual transmission on this? Because it's kind of special.
Okay. Isn't there kind of a mechanical function that makes it a little bit easier to shift? Like, is it a rev matching feature?
Yes, it does rev matching. And it's an intelligent manual button that you can push. And I think it does rev matching. And I also think it makes it less difficult for you to stall. But manual on this is like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so we could hold up this Corolla Hatchback. If you've got a young driver and you want to teach them how to drive a manual transmission, this would be a good vehicle for them
probably
to learn.
Probably a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other test drive reviews. We've got a Lexus ES300H Ultra Luxury, very middle of the road luxury vehicle that is just flat out a nice coddling car. I've got a quick spin review on that. And then we've got the one of the burliest vehicles BMW offers. That's the BMW M8 Competition Convertible.
Yeah.
617 horsepower, twin turbo V8 in that. The one we tested bottom line at $180,245. An amazing vehicle that delivers blistering performance, but also kind of grand tour posh and luxury as well. So, just really a remarkable vehicle.
That is a strangely easy vehicle to drive at low speed. As you mentioned,
indeed.
It's a grand tour, and it asks nothing of you in exchange for its 617 horsepower around town.
Nothing in terms of acceleration, and also despite the fact that it has got racetrack level handling, depending on how you have the vehicle set, a surprisingly comfortable ride as well. Again, going to that grand tour attitude.
Well, and those wheels look amazing on the vehicle that you had.
Gigantic brakes
showing through the wheel beams as well.
Gold brakes,
indeed.
It looks like.
Yeah. Yes, we will post this review on our Facebook page so you can check it out. And then finally, I have to admit, this is a vehicle that I did not know existed. Tom did an article called What Was the Monteverdi Safari? So if you want to win a trivia contest with a vehicle that no one almost – nobody has heard of. This was a SUV from the 70s that was essentially a coach-built, rebodied International Scout. Very unusual automotive footnote.
Which historically sounds like the most improbable thing possible.
It really does. In some ways, kind of ahead of its time.
So you could combine a four-speed manual transmission with a Chrysler 440 cubic inch V8 with an International Harvester Scout and Italian bodywork and Swiss interior coachwork. It is the most improbable thing ever in automotive history.
Indeed.
But does it also float? Because it looks like it's being pulled out of water in that picture. I just have to put that out there.
You know what? It looks like it's being winched out of the water, making it the world's worst promotional picture.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, kids, we are flat out of time. Damon, thank you for that summary of what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog. You can check that out by just going to consumerguide.com. Check out what Jill's been working on by going to Pickup Truck and SUV Talk. All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. We thank Ash Hack and the good folks at Toyota for joining us today. Special thanks to Lady B and the good folks at WCPT AM 820. They have made working through this virus very easy, and we appreciate that. As always, thanks to my radio mentor, Steve and Johnny. You guys are awesome. Check us out or drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. We want to hear from you. If you don't like the show, we want to hear that too. We're not going to do anything about it, but check us out anyway. Let's talk about cars again next week.